Okay, we're starting on Yud-Chet Amud Aleph, the new Perek. Gemara is going to discuss here, the Mishnah is really going to discuss the Ma'alot of a Kohen Gadol and a Melech. Tosfos points out that we did this because in the previous Perek we spoke about the Kohen Gadol, and we spoke, then once we spoke about the Kohen Gadol, we move on to the Melech, because the Melech has a higher standard or stature than the Kohen Gadol. After that, we'll go back to the regular program, and we'll deal with the Dayanim and Din. But here they're just taking a sidebar to deal with the status of Kohen Gadol Melech in the context of Din. As Gemara says, Mishnah says, Kohen Gadol Dan V'Danin Oto. So he can be part of a Beit Din. And number two is that he can be judged Me'id. He's allowed to testify in cases U'Me'idin Oto, and people can testify against him. Choleitz V'Chotzin Li'Ishto. He can perform Chalitza, as well as others can perform Chalitza to his wife. U'Me'abim Et Ishto. Others can be, meaning his brothers, can be miyabim, his wife. Whereas, avahu, enu miyabim. But he cannot be miyabim, the wives of his brothers. B'nei Yeshu asur bi'almana. We'll see in the Gemara, but it's obvious here that he has an additional restriction as being the Kohen Gadol, that he cannot marry an almana. On top of that, he must marry a betula, which will be the mitigating factor that he has an assay and a lota assay that are associated with marrying his brother's widow. Mate lo mate, enu yotzei achar amita. If he has one of the relatives, the seven relatives that he would otherwise, a kohen would be mitame for and mi mitabel lehem, doesn't go follow the mita. He doesn't the procession mita. Hey nechasin vehu nigle. He stays hidden while they are open. If they're on a given street, he does not appear on that street. Hey, niglin v'hu nechsil. Again, if he's then hey niglin, if they go ahead and they're exposed, v'hu nechsil, he's not available. So the basic idea is that as they turn the corner, meaning onto the second street where they're hey nechsin, where they're covered, v'hu nechsil, he appears on the first street that they were on. And then again, when they appear on that street, he will not appear on that street. So he stays about a street behind them. Purpose of this is to protect him from becoming tamei, which is the main issue. And the pasuk that they're darshing, we're seeing in the Gemara, is that min hamikdash lo yitze. So when he died, min hamikdash lo yitze, sounds like he can't leave the base of mikdash whatsoever, which will be the opinion of the next Tana. But the first Tana, which is Rabbi Meir, thinks min hamikdash lo yitze means mikdushato lo yitze. Mikdash, not meaning literally the Mikdash, but Mikdushato, that he can't leave his Kdusha as the Kohen Gadol. So what do we do to take those preventative measures is that we make sure that he's nowhere near the Mita. Ad Petach Sharayir, he goes all the way out till the gate of the city, the Kvarot, or the Beit HaKvarot was outside of the city, but he'll go until Petach Sharayir, Divrei Rabbi Meir. That's Rabbi Meir's interpretation of Min Mikdash Lo Yitze, is Mikdushato Lo Teitze, but not the fact that he cannot leave the Mikdash at all. He can't leave the Mikdash. Period. When he is giving Nechama to others, the normal way is that everybody passes by in front of the Avel and they give their wishes or condolences to the individual. In this case, what they will do is Mimuna Mimatso Beino Levein Am. So over here, the Mimuna, his right hand man, will actually be on his right side, and the rest of the Am will be on his left side when he passes in front of the individual. We'll have to discuss why, or in the Gemara we'll discuss why. But here we're trying again to protect him from coming into contact with anybody who is Tamei Meit. When others come to give nechama, condolences to him, everybody says to him, we take on the burden or whatever needs to be done. I mean, we will be in place of you, so nothing bad should happen to you, or that any kapara that needs to be had should come to you. Which is interesting, just the Gemara in Kiddushin speaks about this, that when a person's parents pass away, they say, Hare ani kaparat mishkavo, for the first year. Is the Arena Kamash? What's the name of the Rebbe? Ariani Kaparat Mishkavo. So in that sense, maybe that's what they're saying over here. Instead of the Kohen Gadol, the one who should be saying Ariani Kaparat Mishkavo, they are saying in place of him, Anu Kaparat Cha. We are in place of you in that instance. V'umar lahem, Tidbarchu min ha-shamayim. And he says to them that you should be blessed from the heavens. So again, the Suda Rishona, the Avel is not allowed to have his own meal or make his own food, so they bring him the food. So when they bring the meal to him, The rest of the Am sits on the floor, and he sits on a bench. Again, proper kavod, proper conduct in front of the Kohen Gadol. I mean, that they do the avelut for him. They do all the tzar. They act as if they are the avelim, and he sits be kavod ala sefsa. A melech. So now we switch from Kohen Gadol to melech. Lo dan, lo daninoto. He cannot be a judge, and he cannot be, a case cannot be brought against him. Lo me'id v'lo me'idinoto. He does not testify, and nobody testifies against him. Lo choleitz v'lo chotzin li'ishto. Right, he does not perform chalitza, and we do not perform chalitza to his wife. Lo me'yabim v'lo me'yabim li'ishto. He does not perform yibum, and others do not perform, his brothers do not perform yibum with his wife. If he wants to perform the mitzvah of chalitza, if he wants to perform the mitzvah of yibum, let him do it. You know, that's a melech should be keeping the halacha. If he wants to keep the halacha, there's no isur in keeping the halacha. He should go ahead, zachor l'tov, if he wants to do the mitzvah. Amru lo, ein shomim lo. They responded to Rabbi Yehuda and said, we don't listen to him. It's not his right to do that. Again, we'll see in the Gemara why. Ve'inosim amunoto. We do not marry the widow of a king. You are allowed to marry the widow of a king. Shekei matzinu with David, shenasa matoh shel Shaul. David married the widow of Shaul. Obviously, Rabbi Yehuda's suggestion is not that anybody can marry the widow of the king, but another king could marry the widow of a king. Here, Shaul's. Right. So the melech matoh shel melech, right, that the king himself, the next king, basically married the widow of the previous king. That's what we find by David. It says, chad beit adonecha v'chnei odecha b'chekecha. Is that the idea that you will be given the house of your predecessor plus all his wives. So all of his wives mean that his widows will also be included in that, are included in that package. So the basic idea, the overarching theme here, by the Kohen Gadol and the king, is that they are afforded a certain amount of kavod, they are of certain amount of stature. In order to maintain that stature, we don't associate them with normal conduct of court conduct, normal conduct of a velut. And that there's certain things that we have to, if we want to keep them to be people of kedusha and people that are looked up to, then we don't have them be treated like regular hedyotot. So now Gemara says, Kohen Gadol dan, Kohen Gadol can adjudicate a case considered on a beis din pshita. Gemara says, right? What's the question? Why can't he be on a Sanhedrin? My says, Dani noto, it's trichle. We need it to tell you that he can be judged. Alright, hanami pshito. That's also simple. Ilo dainin le, ihu, hechadayan. If he's not judged, if he's not able to be judged, then how can he be a judge? Why? Vaktiv, it koshushu vikoshu. Vamresh lakesh kshatat smacha, vachakak shot achirim. That, you have to be straight. Stand up straight. And then make others stand up straight. You know, you have to harden yourself before you harden others. You got to fix yourself before you fix others. So if he's unable to be face the possibility of being judged, then he can't be a judge either. I mean, it's a two-way street. If you want to be a person who judges others, you have to be able to be judged yourself or subject to judgment yourself. Rabbi says, "Ela ayde the kabbai the mitnei melech lo dan velo dani noto tananami kohen gadol dani v'dani noto." So Rabbi says, by kohen gadol, it's not a chiddush whatsoever. Dan v'dani noto is not relevant really by kohen gadol. It's obvious pshita that both of them are relevant, or both of them can be done. The only question is by a melech. By a melech, there might be more question about that. So the statement by melech, which says lo dan velo dani noto, therefore the parallel structure of the mishnah, the kohen gadol says dani v'dani noto. There's another possibility. Hakama Shalan teaches us this. Kedetanya. Kohen Gadol sheragat nefesh v'mezid neherag. A Kohen Gadol that murders is put to death. Bishogeg, if it was an accident, gole, he's put into galut. Over alasei v'alo tasei. Alright, so that's what we'll see in the Gemara in a second. Over alasei v'alo tasei. And that, quite this ambiguous piece of the Braita, the Gemara will explain later on. He has a din of ejot about everything. B'mezid ne'erag, that he's killed, if he murders, he's killed. Pshito. B'shogeg goleh itzrichle. We know we need to teach us that when he goes into shogeg, he goes into galut. Hanami pshito. Of course that. Why shouldn't he go into galut? Itzrich. So this is what, Shaul, you're asking. Sachadat l'mina hoviktiv, v'yashabba mot koin agadol. That the person who goes to the arei miklat, or imiklat, to escape the goel adam when he kills b'shogeg, he stays there until the death of the kohen gadol. So I would say, ema kodit leita kanta b'chazara ligle. Anybody who has the ability to be freed from the ir miklat, when the Kohen Gadol dies, he can be put in galut. The late takanta b'chazara lo ligle. Someone who has no ability to be freed from the ir miklat, maybe he shouldn't go into galut. I mean, it's two sides of the coin. If you can be freed from the ir miklat, then you can be placed into the miklat. If you can never get out of the ir miklat, maybe you never have to enter the ir miklat. That's not. We have a Mishnah. This Mishnah says, "Horei Kohen Gadol, o Kohen Gadol sharag et nevesh enu yotzei masham deolam." That's the answer to your question. It's the Mishnah from Hakot that a Kohen Gadol who is killed by the murderer, or a Kohen Gadol who murders, is never freed from the ir miklat. Why? So Rashi points this out. Rashi says, "Bishogeg Gadol the ir miklat, venu yotzei masham deolam, the came into ein Kohen Gadol b'mikdash." There's no Kohen Gadol in the Mikdash at the time. Shu goleh, b'mitat mi yashuv. Whose mita is going to free him? V'hein Kohen Gadol sharagat ha-nefesh shogeg mitat mi yashuv ha-leka Kohen Gadol. He is stripped of his kunah gdolah. When he murders, he's no longer the Kohen Gadol. He's lost his status as Kohen Gadol. He's lost his kedusha as Kohen Gadol. Therefore, when he enters into the Ir Miklat, he's not the Kohen Gadol. So that means if an individual murdered the Kohen Gadol, and there is no Kohen Gadol, or the Kohen Gadol himself murdered, so there is no Kohen Gadol now, because he's lost his status as Kohen Gadol, then when they enter into the Ir Miklat, who's going to free them? When somebody dies, who's going to free them? Tosus asks the question, that there are, and this is Gemara Malkos says, that has to do with the Gemara Din. It's not about when the murder took place, it's actually about when the Gemara Din is. So truthfully, if a Kohen Gadol is appointed before the Gemara Din, then they would be freed from the Ir Miklat, and they would have a Kohen Gadol. So that's what Tosfos mentions over here, Perish. So obviously they didn't appoint a new Kohen Gadol until the Gemara Din. And the Lekha Meshuach Shavar, Lekha Meshuach Milchama. And that there was no Meshuach Shavar, a previous Kohen Gadol, meaning a previous Kohen Gadol who filled in for the Kohen Gadol when he was Tamei. So in that case, everybody agrees in Makot that if the Meshuach Shavar dies, he frees the people in the Ir Miklat. Meshuach Mochama, because Machok is in the Gemara Makot. So you have to say all these circumstances don't exist. That's why they can't get out of Ir Miklat. So since they can't get out of the Ir Miklat, I would have had a Havamina that they shouldn't be put into Galut. So our Brice is coming to teach us, no, nevertheless they do go into Galut. So Gemara says, Emelo Ligle. Why don't we say this? Let's say that they don't go into Galut. Kamash Malon, the Mishnah tells us no. So when it says, Vei Mama Hanami, let us say yes, why not? Amakra, Anushama Kol Rotzeach. That the Ir Miklat is built so that every Rotzeach goes there, Afilu Kohen Gadol B'mashma. Kol Rotzeach is a reboy to include anybody. Anybody who murders goes to the Ir Miklat. It's irrespective of whether you can get out or not. The only question is you have to be there, and everybody who kills Bishokeg has got to be there. If there's a new Kohen Gadol, it will help him. If it's before his Gmar Din. If it's before he's sentenced. If it's after his sentencing, then he will not be freed, right? That doesn't help. No, because he has to be before sentencing. There's no, at the time of sentence, it has to be at Mot Kohen Gadol. If there's no Kohen Gadol in place, when he's sentenced to Nigle, then he never gets out. He's stuck. Alright. So now the Gemara dissects the other part of this braisa. So over I'll say, Valota say. So Gemara says, what do you mean he's over and I say, Lota say? Los Hagit Lo Avar. Alright. So he's not over. I mean, why does he have to be over and I say, and Lota say? What does that mean? So Achigamar, im avar la seva lo tasei arihu kehejo tuchod varav. That's what the Brice is saying. And if he violates any other din, I mean, regular asei lo tasei, he's like a regular hejot, he's like a regular layman. Why? Pshito. Of course, why shouldn't he be like a layman? No, sagadat chamina olvetznan, we had in our Mishnah, in danin lo etashevet lo etanavi sheker velo etkoen gadol. So this is what we were talking about, right? We had this in the previous perek, that you're not allowed to bring to din the shevet a navi sheker or a kohen gadol elapi beit din shel shivim echad. You need a beis din of 71 to adjudicate a case that involves the kohen gadol. So based on our previous mishnah, which is continued here, dealing with the status of the kohen gadol, I would have thought that a kohen gadol requires a beit din of 71. That's what it seems to say in the previous mishnah. Somebody says, why is that different? We learn from the pasuk. Kol adavar gadol yaviu lechaz devarav shel gadol. Person of stature, their issues must be brought before the Beit Din Gadol. Ema kol devarav shel gadol. I would have thought anything, any adjudication of a case that involves the Kohen Gadol must be brought before a Beit Din of 71. So the Gemara says, no, kamash malan. That's not the case. That when it comes to an asay and a lot asay, he can go through a Beit Din of 3. So Gemara says, Veima Hochanami. Why not? The limud seems to be a good limud. Why not say he has to be in a Beis Din 71? Where it says, Mi divrei gadol. Doesn't say everything to do with the gadol, whether a davar, a gadol, ktiv, davar, gadol, mamash. I mean that you also have to deal with the pashat pshat of the pasuk. The pasuk beside of the pasuk is called davar gadol, meaning that big issues come before you. So it's big issues of big guns have to go before the beis din agadol. So big issues of big guns go before the beis din agadol, or the big beis din. So in that case, when a kohen gadol is dealing with issues of capital crimes, and those issues, they have to come before the beis din agadol. When you're dealing with mamonos issues, right, regular mamonos issues, then you... they can go before a beis din of 3, a regular beis din, and even by malkut, right, suggests they can go before a beis din of 23. The issue of agadol means it's got to be really something of a capital crime that you have to be brought before the beis din agadol. All right. Now the Gemara continues. Me'id u'me'idin oto, dissecting our Mishnah about that he can testify and others can testify against him. So me'id, how could it be that the kohen gadol can go and testify in court? Vatanya. Though we have a braisa that explains to us by Hashavat Aveda, it says Vitalamta. Pamim shata mitalem, upamim shi'ata mitalem. That there are times when you do look away and times when you don't look away. Meaning that there's an isur to walk away by an Aveda and not pick it up and take care of it. But the braisa, the Gemara Darshans, we learned this together in Baba Metzia. Vitalamta, which means that sometimes you do look away. Sometimes it's not proper for him to deal with the Aveda. What is that? Haketzav Kohen Vehu Beit HaKvarot. The Aveda is found in the Beit HaKvarot. We don't demand of the Kohen to become Tamei, which is an Isur, right? For him to become Tamei. We don't demand of him to go into the Beit HaKvarot to go get the Aveda. Sakein Veinak Lichvi Kvodo. Also be someone of stature, of age, that it's not appropriate for him to start bending down and dealing with these Avedot. And we say also he can walk away. There's the other exception that instance, if he's a diamond cutter and the value of the object does not match the value of the work that he does. In the same period he will be Bashiv Aveda, he will lose more money than the object itself is worth. So the Shabbat Aveda, right, has to be considered in the context of what it's going to cost to have this Aveda returned. Kach Nemar Vitalamta. But the basic idea that comes out of this Braita, which is the Gemara's after here, is that we have a Kvoda Briot, is Doche Lav Sheba Torah. So it's also over here, if it's Kvoda Briot, which is Enu Fi Kvodo for the Kohen Gadol to show up in court and testify, then why should we demand of him to testify in court? So Amar Rav Yosef, Me'id Lamelech. That's fine, he'll testify against the king. Enu Fi Kvodo, is he talking about lay people, the Kohen Gadol won't come. But if he's talking about the king, the king, to come testify with the king, that's not a beneath the dignity of the Kohen Gadol. The Gemelech has a greater kavod, level of stature, so the Kohen Gadol comes to testify him, that's not beneath his kavod. When it says, Vatznan, didn't we just read the Mishnah? Lo dan, ve lo danin oto, lo meid, ve lo meidin oto. That you don't testify against the king. So what are you talking about here? El Amar Abzera meid leven melech. We're talking about the prince. The Kohen Gadol could come and testify the prince. This is very interesting. I'm ben melech hejotu. That's a very interesting line in the Gemara, that a prince has no status. Yeah, that a prince is a lay person, as opposed to what we see today in Tachsisei, right, Hamalchus, that the prince is of an elevated status, right, that it's not only the king, but the prince himself also has status. Here the Gemara views the prince have to have no status whatsoever, and he's a jote, he's a lay person. I mean, the king is the king, and the prince, right, is a regular lay person, he has no standing. When he becomes king, then we'll talk about it, but until he becomes king, the prince has no status. So the Gemara says, okay, so that doesn't, why is that lefi kvodo? That's ain't lefi kvodo also for the Kohen Gadol to go testify to a prince. So Gemara says, Ela me'id bifnei ha-melech. Now what we do is that he testifies before the king. So what does that mean, before the king? So the Rashi continues over here that when he's made bifnei ha-melech means that he is testifying about the prince being, right, a son of the king. And even though he's a head jote, the Kohen Gadol calls him to testify, but we had the king sit in on the beis din. We have the king sit here on that beis din. So now Gemara asks, wait a minute, that's not no dan velo dani no to. How can the king sit, v'had ein moshivim melech v'sanhedrin? Don't we have a din that a melech cannot be part of the Sanhedrin? So how can you sit the king as part of the Sanhedrin for the Kohen Gadol to go and testify? Why can't the king be in the Sanhedrin? Rashi claims the reason is because nobody can talk. Once the king has spoken, once the king has an opinion, nobody's allowed to, right, go against the word of the king. Nobody's allowed to ignore what the king says. If the king says something, that's what goes. So it'd be inappropriate, especially like they're deliberating or something's happening and the king says something, the others will disagree with the king, or the king will be one-upped by one of the parties that's in the Sanhedrin. That will diminish the kavod of the king. So the king can't be part of the Can't be compared to the Beis Din. So when it says, Mishum Yikara the Kohen Gadol, Atav Yotif. So what happens is, no, the king shows up because of the honor of the Kohen Gadol. He'll sit there. Not that he's part of the Sanhedrin, but he has to sit there, be present. So then they accept the testimony of the Kohen Gadol while the king is sitting there. Kaihu v'azil. Then the king leaves. And then the Sanhedrin, the residual Sanhedrin, will deliberate about the case. So in order to make it that the Kohen Gadol, it's not beneath his dignity to come and testify, we bring in the king. So Rashi and Tosfos also mentions this, the same idea, that it sounds like the king, that the prince issue still remains. So the prince issue remains, because we're not going to force the Kohen Gadol, the king, to go sit in cases, regular lay cases. So man, the Kohen Gadol also knows testimony. So only we're going to let him testify is if a king's sitting there. But we're not going to say the king, there's some case where the Kohen Gadol knows some testimony, and the king out of his palace to sit there so the Kohen Gadol testified. That we're not going to do. But when the case involves the prince, the son of the king, then we don't feel bad about asking the king to come sit on the case. It's relevant to the king. It has to do with the prince. So therefore we say, if we want the Kohen Gadol to testify now, we're going to bring the king and force him to sit there so that it will not be beneath the dignity of the Kohen Gadol. Tosus over here says that he thinks the Gemara knew all along that a king cannot be part of the Beis Din. And the only question was, do we bring the king out to sit there or not to sit there? That's one issue that he mentions. The other thing that Tosus mentions is that the Gemara might have thought until this point that it's Tahadei Melech Dan, that we thought the king cannot adjudicate a case, is Hanimil Levado. That's by himself. Right? That's when he's by himself. He can't do Mishum Dein Dani Noto. Since he cannot be brought a case against him, he can't sin in judgment by himself. But if he's enjoined with a large Beis Din or Sanhedrin, then maybe he could have sat in Din. So the Gemara wants, Tosfos is trying to figure out, how come our Mishnah says, Ein Dan Vein Dani Noto? Why does the Gemara have to bring the additional statement over here that he cannot be part of a Sanhedrin? So there are two possibilities. One is, our Mishnah was talking about a case period that we thought that he can't adjudicate a case, but we thought he couldn't, that we thought maybe that he could sit as part of the Beis Din. So then maybe he can sit there and be silent or whatever it is that he needs to. And the Gemara says, no, he can't do that. He just has to be outside of the Beis Din. Number two is, or the other possibility he suggests, is that he could have, we could have thought that the our mission is addressing a case where he's by himself. Since he cannot be in a court case, can't be brought against him, he cannot sit in a case by himself. But he's sitting with others that can be judged, then it'd be fine that he was in that case. Along comes the Gemara and says, no way, nothing happens. He cannot be involved whatsoever in the Sanhedrin. He can't be a member of the Sanhedrin. The only thing he can do is sit on the side in a case where it's, again, lefik vodo of the melech to be there, which is a case against the prince, in order to make it that it's lefik vodo for the Kohen Gadol to testify. I didn't think of that. That's an interesting point. Whether Moshe, who is a melech, is part of the Sanhedrin. Right. It's interesting. Possible. It's a good question. I don't know. The one thing I will also mention here is that we said before, Vitalamta, that's not the fiqh for the birot. That the reason we're not asking the Kohen Gadol to testify here is because it's not fiqh for the birot. So Gemara says, why don't you just set up a case where it's like independent, like Edut HaChodesh. Edut HaChodesh, where there's no issue of kavod or beneath the dignity of the Kohen Gadol. They set up set it up that way. Why? Because Tosfos points out here, by Divrei Yisurim, that there's Ein Chokmah Vein Tevunah LeNeged Hashem. When it comes to Isur, there's no such thing as kavod HaBriyot. When it comes to Dinei Mamonos, then we can talk about Dochi Mipnei Kavod HaBriyot. Then you can talk about kvod abriyot when it has to do with monetary matters. But when it comes to Yisurim, there's no such thing as kvodo, or there's that kvod abriyot. We don't deal with that. So Tosfos has to answer in the end that when it says here, Eim Eidi Noto, it sounds like any case. I mean, it's a statement, it's a blanket statement that includes even Dei Mamonos. But Eino Chanami, that if it had been Yisurim or Eidu Tachodesh, the Kohen Gadol could have gone and testified there, and that wouldn't have been an issue, and that could have been a solution to the problem. Our problem is that our Mishnah says Eim Eid, period. A made period sounds like in any case. So that's why the Gemara wants to find out where's the case of Mamononos where he can also testify. Right, Gufa. Emo Shavim Melech Sanhedrin. Below Melech Kohen Gadol Biyibur Shana. So this is what we just discussed. The king cannot be a part of the Sanhedrin. And number two is, a king and a Kohen Gadol cannot be party to the Beis Din that's making the decision about making the leap year. Melech b'Sanhedrin, the king cannot be part of the Sanhedrin. Nechtiv lo taneh al riv, lo taneh al rav. The problem is that you're not allowed to. They're going to dash in lo taneh al riv means do not be afraid. But over here it says lo taneh al rav. You're not allowed to what at least score to undermine the word of the king. So if that's the case, or the muflash b'Dayanim, the highest of the Dayanim. So if the Melech says something now, all of a sudden there's no there's nothing going. So you look at Rashi, Lotan al-Rab, Enecha Rashi al-Stor, Divrei ha-Muflash b'Dayanim. Can't undermine, you can't go against the word of the best of the Dayanim, the top of the Dayanim. Yamar Melech Chova, Tulo Mazinach, the Mechzele is Chuta. Once the king says it's a Chova, nobody else is going to see it for him as Chut. I mean, the fact that the king, if the king says something and nobody's supposed to undermine the word of the highest ranking individual there, you're going to run into a problem. Nobody's going to be able to say anything anymore. Nobody's going to be able to see the other side of the case. So since the king has that status or that level or stature, we don't want him in the Beis Din because he's going to influence the case. We want to have it that there's some sort of flatness to the Sanhedrin so that everybody feels that they can equally deliberate. Obviously, there is some hierarchy, but the hierarchy is not so great that nobody is willing to say anything. So it's severe. The king, right, is too far above. And you have to say that because we see in other cave times, we're going to see later on, that when it comes to the Beis Din, we start from the lowest ranking and go up to the highest ranking so that they don't feel scared about what they say and they don't argue on the Muflash Beis Din. But it might be by a king that it's just too much. I mean, that it's too much stature and they're too afraid that they're not going to say their real opinion in front of him. He's going to influence the case and we don't want that.
Or because of the kavod that needs to be afforded to the king, therefore he has to speak first in the case. And because he speaks first in the case, that's going to mitigate anybody else's ability to speak up in the case.
So now, what about Melech Kohen Gadol B'Yibur Shana? Why can't they be participants in making the leap year? Melech Mishom Afsanya, the king because of his troops. Why? Because the king pays a yearly sum to his troops. So you know what the king wants? The king wants a leap year. In the leap year, he gets 13 months for the price of 12. So he's paying them a yearly sum to work for him. He says, you know what? Make it a leap year every year. That way I get 13 months worth of work for 12 months worth of pay. So the king has a bias to want it. Kohen Gadol, Mishum Tzina. The other way for the Kohen Gadol. The Kohen Gadol wants it not to be a leap year because of the cold. Rashi claims it's because of going to the mikveh on Yom HaKippurim. Because when it comes to Yom Kippur, depending when Yom Kippur falls, will determine how cold it is. So if he has to go to mikveh and he has to go to all the washings five times on Yom Kippur, it might be a little, if it's freezing cold outside, he's not going to want to be dipping in the mikveh at that time. So when it's a leap year and Yom Kippur is much later, he's not going to like it. So he's going to have a bias to want the year to be not a leap year. That's what Rashi claims. Tosfos argues on Rashi for a number of reasons. One of them happens to be that we know from the Gemara in Yoma, right? The Mishnah in Yoma says they used to heat up metal and put it into the mikveh because it was only a shvut, it was only din derabanan, and they used to heat up the mikveh on Yom Kippur so that the Kohen Gadol could go and dip in it. So who cares if it's cold? I mean, I still think it was a problem. Even though the water's warm, when he gets out of the water, it's freezing cold. But Tosfos said that, if the water's warm, what does he mind so much? So he says that it's because he has to walk around barefoot. He has to do all the avoda all day barefoot, and it's going to be freezing. The stones are going to be freezing, so he's not going to want to. Right? They didn't have those coils that go under the stones to make them warm. So he was walking around barefoot in the cold stones. He doesn't want it to be that way. So because of that, the Kohen Gadol has a vested interest in seeing that there is no leap year over here. So Amar Papa Shma Mina Shata Batar Yarcha Azil. So Papa says we can conclude from this that the months make a difference. So now Rashi says, what does it mean? Rashi says Shata Batar Yarcha Azil is Achar Yerechaim Aruim Liot. That the year goes based on what should have been the month then. Imlo nitabra, if it was not made into a leap year. Holech kor v'chom shel shana v'tzina aruya b'mechoshvan havya b'tishrei. So meaning that if this month should have been cheshvan, and because of the leap year now it's tishrei, tishrei gets the weather that should have been in cheshvan. It's a pretty simple idea, it's not so complicated, that if you move the month up, then if you make it a leap year, you're going to move the seasons, basically. You're moving the month into the other month's season. Rashi claims that it's lunar. Tosfos questions Rashi's pshat. He says, wait a minute, isn't that the whole purpose of making a leap year? The whole purpose of a leap year is to reconcile between the lunar months and the seasons. So all you're doing, how could it be that what's supposed to take place in Cheshvan now takes place in Tishrei? The whole idea is to match up Tukhuvat Tishrei with Tishrei. So if that's what you're doing, then the season shouldn't be off. You're actually trying to reconcile the seasons and they're supposed to be together. So Tosfos in the end explains that the Tosefta Mayri Bishmaita the Mishum Aviv Uperita Ilan, right? That we're dealing here with the crops, the early months of the crops, And that's what the Kohen Gadol, that'll affect how cold it is in Tishrei because of the other years. I mean, that it's a relative to other years, how cold will it be in Tishrei. Not that Mer Cheshvan is the dictating factor here, but rather the Tishrei fluctuates. The Tishrei itself fluctuates, and where it'll be relative to other years of Tishrei will make a difference. I mean, that if you make a leap year, it'll be colder than last year's Tishrei. So that's the idea. Not that it's actually, you'll take on the simanim of the following month. All right. Mar says, Ini, is that really true? V'anach gimel roik bakar. We had these three shepherds that were sitting out. Rabbanan overheard their conversation. Chanamar, one of them says, Im bachir v'lakish kechada. If the wheat, which was planted early, and the sorin that were planted late, all emerged together, right? Dienats, they appear, dinhu adenhu adar. This month is definitely adar. V'mlav, that doesn't happen, late din adar. This is not adar, this is going to be shvat. Chanamar, im tor bitzapar b'telegamut, that a shore in the morning almost dies from the cold. Ubitiara in the afternoon, betul teina yidmuch, he'll hide himself under the shade of a fig tree because it's so hot. Shalach mashchein, he'll rub his skin against the tree in order to cool himself off. Deinu adar, then it's adar. Vimlav, if not, late dein adar. So this month is not appropriate to be adar. Vecharamar, im kidum takif lichada, if you get a strong easterly wind, yeyapach bloch, if you breathe against it, you'll nafik lekable, it'll glide against it and stop it. I don't know if he's meaning that it'll make some moisture or some, right, you'll see the steam of your mouth coming out. Right, deinu adar, then it's adar. V'im lav, late deinu adar, then it's not adar. Vavrua rabbanon, and the rabbanon made it into a leap year, because they heard what the roei bakar said, and they says they saw the simanim, and they said, they're right, there shouldn't be adar, there should be shvat. Vavrua ha'ishata. So that means that every month has, the seasons follow the months of the year. There are certain qualities that should be apparent during the month of Adar. If they're not there, that's not Adar, it's Shabbat. So then how can the conclusion of Rapopo be that, if it was supposed to be Cheshvan, Tishrei takes on the characteristics of Cheshvan, that's not the case. So even Chachamim, that the month takes on that characteristic, the seasons are determined by the month. Mar says, V'tizbara, Rabbanon, Haravato, Samuch? What do you think? That the Rabbanon were so making a bunch of shepherds to make it into a leap year? That can't be the case. Rabbanon, Achshuvainu, Samuch. They did the calculation, they saw it should be a leap year. Roy Bekar is to you Ehudi Stayim Milsayu, that they use that as a secondary reason. They listened to what they had to say because they realized that the Cheshbon was off. And after they heard what the Roy Bekar says, they said, we're right. It's true. The seasons are off now. We got to correct for those seasons. But the basic, I think, statement of Rav Papa, which should make the most sense, is that the lunar calendar is fluctuating because it's not static against the seasons. The seasons are determined by a solar calendar. And since the solar calendar, in that sense, is static by the seasons, then when the lunar calendar has to be adjusted to match up with the solar calendar, it's going to over time, it's going to fluctuate. It's going to have some sort of fluctuation within the solar calendar based on the years that are leap years and the years that are not leap years. And each time you adjust for it, you're going to overshoot and undershoot each way, and the average will be the season. But there will be fluctuations within that season. So you'll have, as we call it, late Yom Tov will begin late this year or begin early this year. Early and late is relative to the seasons. It's not relative to right the date. It's on the right lunar date. It's just relative to the seasons that are there. All right, now, Choleitz v'choltzin. Right, he can perform Chalitza, and you can be Choleitz Dishto, Kapasik v'tani. The Gemara gives no differentiation between Loshnam and Eirusim, Loshnam and Nisuin. Right, that he's chalitz v'chotzin, and then it says he's not, right, about Yibum, it says that he may not perform Yibum. But whereas his brothers can perform Yibum with the wife of the Kohen Gadol himself cannot perform Yibum with his brother's wives. So Gemara says, kapasik v'tani, it doesn't matter that if his brother was married to the woman that had Nisuin, or he was only engaged to the woman that had Erusin. Either way, we say no Yibum. So Gemara says, bishlom in asumim have aseh v'lo taseh. Fine, for the Nisuin, it makes sense that he can't perform Yibum. Why? There's an aseh, which is betulah me'av ikach. There's a lot to say, which is not allowed to marry amana, right? Is he not allowed to take an amana? Does that make sense? Avam, right? Ein asay doche lot asay v'asay, and an asay cannot overcome the asay of doing performing yibum. Cannot overcome the asay and the lot asay of betulah me'amav ikach, and that is not lot ikach amana. But ela mina yusim amai by yusim. Why can't he go? Amai yavo asay v'itche lot asay. If the asay of yibum, what's the lot asay mina yusim? The only thing that's involved with the erusin is a lota say that you can't marry an almanah. But there's no assay of betulah me'amav ikach. If she's a bein erusin, then she's still a betula. She's still a betula. You only have an elota say, and you should have the asev yubum come and override the elota say of not marrying an almana. The Gemara says, Zera bia rishona ata bia shnia. We don't allow him to do it. True. The first bia is a mitzvah of yibum. He forms this of yibum, so there he'll override the isur of almana. But after the first bia, when she becomes his wife, then she has a wife who is an almana. After that point, if she becomes a full-fledged wife to him, she's a full-fledged wife to him, he's now married to an almana, and there's no more mitzvah that he's performing. The mitzvah is completed once he's taken the woman as a wife. So Tanya Nami Yochi, a price that supports it. Im kim no babalo bia rishona kano. If she goes ahead and performs the bia rishona to perform ibum from the erusin, it works, and he's called a wife. Vasur the kaima, and then he cannot keep her any longer. Bevia shnia, meaning that he's not allowed to keep her after that point in time. Once she becomes a full-fledged wife, then he can't keep her anymore because there's no more mitzvah of ibum. No more mitzvah of ibum means kohen gadol is married to an almana, and that's an isur. That isur remains. So the reason is ein ochanami. You're right. He could have performed ibum when it comes to a woman who was only net ares or net asa to his brother, but we don't allow it because the point, it's going to be almost fruitless or pointless. He's going to have to be arishonah to be kind of the mitzvah, and after that, there's nothing. He's going to have to divorce the woman right away. So what's the point of doing that? It seems unnecessary, or also that we don't want him to continue to keep the woman there. So in order to prevent that, we say no yibum whatsoever. Okay, we'll stop over here.